Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training. Everybody, this is your host, Katie Pepe. Before we jump in, I just wanted to take a quick second and remind you to hit the subscribe button because that helps us so much. We appreciate every subscribe and follow, and we have so much valuable information we want to share with you, so we don't want you to miss an episode. Without further ado, let's jump in. Hey, everyone. Thanks for being here. Have a good one for you today, I think, because we are talking about the top 5 reasons that people continue to struggle with their dogs even after the dog is trained. So a lot of times people will ask me about this before they sign up. And I'm always very honest. And the fact is that, yeah, some people still have a hard time with their dogs when they go home. But not usually, not to a serious extent or anything, but and of course, if people need more help, we give them more help. But it's actually pretty rare that that really happens, because most of the time when people are struggling, hopefully they reach out to me. And if they do, I'm usually able to tell them right away what the tweaks are they need to make. And then they start to see the change. But so I have to imagine there are always folks out there that don't reach out. And I know there are folks out there that have done other training programs that are in that boat where they're still having a hard time with their dog. And oftentimes they don't get the support from the trainer after they go home, which is a shame, because you pay for a program. And as long as you're committed and you're trying, you should see some results. It doesn't mean your dog's going to be perfect. And in some cases, your goals might be unrealistic, but most of the time, I find that's not the case. People are usually very realistic about the things that they want from their dog and that their dog is capable of. So if you have continuing issues with your dog, even after your dog is quote-unquote trained, this one's for you. And I have to imagine everybody does to some extent, right? No one's going to be perfect. The owners aren't perfect. The dog's not perfect. So I think most people, at least in very specific scenarios, probably have some questions about what they could be doing better. And so here we go. Number one, this is, we'll say number 5, right? We're going to count down. But this is probably the most common thing we see when we get dogs that have already been e-collar trained. But the training was done somewhere else. We hear this over and over and over again. Number 5, the owners weren't trained. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on this one because there's not a lot you can do about it right off, right? I mean, obviously you have to go learn, is the answer. But a lot of training programs out there, they focus just on the dog and they never teach the owner, what they have to do. And I mean, that it could be laziness. It could be that they like dealing with dogs, but they don't like dealing with people. Or it could just be ignorance, that they don't understand that just because you train the dog, I hate to say that. I hate to think that like there are people out there training dogs as a profession that don't get this concept. And I don't think there are many, but I'm sure there are some that think, once you train the dog, that's it. The dog's trained. But the fact is there has to be accountability, right? And so if the owner doesn't know how to provide that, then it all kind of goes out the window. So that is a really, really common one. Just because your dog is trained, you also have to be trained, folks. It's so important. I tell people all the time, like, I can train your dog until they're absolutely golden, with me in my car, in my house, when I'm their handler, right? But I absolutely positively cannot train your dog to listen to you. I can't do it. I can give your dog the skills, but you have to learn how to hold your dog accountable. You have to learn how to work your specific dog through their challenging situations. You have to know how to use the mode of communication with your dog that we've been using. If you don't know any of those things, then it's probably going to unravel, right? Even if your dog is good at first, it's probably going to unravel because they're going to start to notice things are different. And that's normal. So you have to be trained. That's just as important as your dog being trained. And that's why if you do a program with us, you do a board and train with us, we spend like 3 hours with you when your dog goes home. And then we have you back for a follow-up lesson, which is usually about an hour. So a total of about 4 hours with you guys. And if you need more, we give you more. So your training is super important too. Number four. Four and five go together. So number four, people put themselves in situations So number four and number three have some overlap. They're pretty tied together. But so number four is people will sometimes put themselves and their dogs in situations they're not ready for yet. And what do I mean by that? I mean, the dog is trained, right? We take the dog, we train them, but they're not going to be perfect. I mean, we're talking usually about programs where I have the dog for 2 weeks. Okay, let's take a minute and just internalize the fact, right, and acknowledge the fact that it's just 2 weeks, right? There's no magic wands. 2 weeks is not a lot of time. We can teach your dog a ton in 2 weeks, right? But they're not going to be perfect. They're not going to be robots. And people tell me all the time they don't want them to be robots. It's like, okay, I spent 2 weeks with your dog. They're not a robot. That means that you need to go into those situations with a safety net, meaning until you get really good at how to do this stuff, how to communicate with your dog, how to hold them accountable, how to use the equipment we give you, the e-collar, you should have a safety net, a long line on your dog, right? So we tell people, if you want to have your dog off leash on the beach, go practice on the beach. If you want to have your dog at the park, go to the park. You want to have your dog on the trail, go to the trail. On a long line, right? Not because your dog isn't trained enough to be off leash, but because you need practice. You need practice. And it just isn't practical for us to come with you in all of those situations and show you everything hands-on, right? We show you at the training center. We're very informative, we're very thorough, we're very detailed, but there's no way, even if we did go out into the world with you for that go-home lesson, and I used to do them at the park, and that's fine, there is no way for us to generate every possible scenario you're going to run into. We just can't do it. There's no way to do it. Just like we can't do it when your dog is here, right? I can challenge your dog in a million different ways. But you're going to find a million more when you go home, right? Because it's a big world with a lot going on. We might expose your dog to bikes, strollers, shopping carts, right? But when you go home, you're going to have like the clown on a tricycle that comes barreling at you. Like, who knows? Stuff happens, right? Off-leash dogs and just anything, right? So there's no way for us to, first of all, expose your dog to everything, but also show you every single scenario that can occur. There's no way for us to do it, guys. So you have to take some responsibility when your dog goes home to take all those instructions we gave you and take all those things we showed you and go out into the world and try it and play with it and experiment with it and keep that long line on your dog until you feel really good. And for some people, that's the next day or that day even. And that's fine. That's great. If you're comfortable and confident and you're seeing your dog be super responsive, wonderful, right? But for some people, it takes a few days. It takes a few weeks. For some people, it takes months. And there are some people with those dogs that can just never really be trusted off leash, but that's super rare. Those dogs aren't that common. But, you know, the idea is you put that long line on your dog. And you can hang on to it at first, and then a little bit later, if things are going really well, you can let them drag it. So then you're really, that's where the magic really happens, is once you're confident enough to drop that long line, and your dog is now just dragging it, they're essentially off leash, and you have relinquished that control, right? And so now you get the real practice of just controlling your dog's behavior with this. And seeing it with your own eyes, and seeing really is believing. And I think sometimes people have a really hard time with that because it's scary. It's scary. But what you don't want to do, and this really is what number four is you don't want to just take your dog to the park with no long line because you're not ready. Unless you are, right? But every once in a while, we'll get that message from someone that they went into this situation and it went sideways. And it's like, well, if you haven't practiced that environment with your long line on, right? If you haven't gone out into these crazy places with your long line on, why are you in them with your long line off? We don't tell anybody to do that. We, especially after just a 2-week program, we never say, okay, take your dog, go into an environment where there's lots of distractions. Totally off leash. You don't need a safety net and hope for the best, right? No, it's like you're still learning how to get behaviors with this and provide your dog accountability with this. And the fact is, you're going to miss it sometimes. You're going to be slow sometimes. You're going to be low sometimes. You're going to be high sometimes, right? You're going to make mistakes. And if you have no safety line on your dog, it's not going to be very forgiving. Right. So e-collar training is very forgiving. You can make lots of mistakes and you're not going to mess up your dog, but you can lose control of them if you don't know what you're doing. Right. And even though we gave you the information, it's a lot to take in. And the fact is, we can't tell you what number you need. We can't tell you that. You have to go out and practice to get comfortable with it. There is no other way to do it. And so we tell everyone, keep that line on until you feel good, then take it off. And that might be right away, or it might take you a little while, and that's okay. Okay. But so number three, like I said, there's going to be some overlap here, is not following the instructions, right? So keeping your dog on the line is part of the instructions, but there are a whole slew of instructions we send you home with. So let's talk about what those are and where we see, the most issues coming in, where we see people kind of shooting themselves in the foot. So when we send dogs home from a board and train, we tell everybody to pick up right where we left off with the same level of structure in their home. Now, is this make or break? Not necessarily, but for some dogs it is. And we just find that people have a much, much higher rate of success when they do this. And so we tell everybody to do it. Because what it does is it keeps your dog in a good frame of mind when they go home. Instead of going, woohoo, I'm a monkey now, all the rules are out the window. It keeps them in that same working, respectful, calm state of mind, which is going to make things easier, and it's going to help you build your new relationship with them. And that's really what this is, guys. You're building a new relationship with your dog, right? So we want that high level of structure in place, meaning your dog isn't autonomous right now. They're not roaming around your house. They're not making their own decisions. We want you really, really using your kennel, using your place command, using your down command, using your heel command, and really spending a good chunk of time telling your dog what to do. Because number one, it keeps your dog in a good frame of mind. But number two, it gives you rehearsal, right? So we can say, yeah, your dog gets practice all day, every day. And that's true. But so are you. So are you, right? Because it's going to be different for you. It's going to be hard for you. And you have to always be telling your dog what to do and enforcing it and providing the accountability and catching the mistakes. And so you're the one that's getting the practice there. That's our tricky way of giving you rehearsal, right? Is using that structure. But it does keep your dog in a good state of mind too. But some of the other things that are part of our instructions are the long line, like we talked about a minute ago, and just not taking that off until you feel really good about it. And I think, you know, back to that again, I think one of the mistakes there is that people tend to go out on the long line in their yard. And it's like, okay, like that, you should do that. But then they go to the park off leash. And that's not what we mean. We mean go to those environments you want your dog to be in on the long line. Okay. At home is probably the least important place to have the safety net. We still want you to do it there too. But just rehearsing at home will not give you the skill or the confidence to go to the beach with your dog. If you want your dog to run on the beach, then you need to go to the beach with them on the long line so you can get a feel for what that looks like. And then you're good, right? Once you know, you know. But like I said, seeing is believing. But some of the other instructions are like providing that accountability at home. So, you know, people tend to let that go because it's easy or because it's not a problem or because they don't mind. And it's like, okay, but this is where you're building the relationship with your dog. It starts inside your own four walls, right? So even though your dog might be well-behaved, I'm not saying your dog's a bad dog. I'm not saying they're out of control. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm just saying you want to build the relationship starting inside your own four walls, right? You want to put your dog on place. You want to provide a real correction if they break it, right? So I'm doing that when your dog is with me. And we've built a relationship that is predicated on, I do what this lady says. And I have to, right? And I can still have fun, but when she says so, right? And I always listen to her. And like, that's the thing people want. They want their dog to listen to them. And it's like, okay, that starts in your house. So ask your dog to do hard things inside your four walls. Put them on place for 3 hours. Put them on place when someone's coming through the door and provide accountability when they screw up. Require that they're polite when you're walking out the front door without commands, right? That's the instruction. No commands, no leash management, no sitting, no waiting. Expect your dog to be polite going out the door. Expect your dog to be polite when you feed them without commands. That's part of the instruction. So all of this stuff goes a very long way to building a relationship of trust, fairness, accountability, predictability, right? And that follows you outside. But if everything's easy inside and your dog just roams around all the time and they just do what they want, or God forbid they break commands and you let it go, that will also follow you outside, right? If you come home and your dog goes absolutely fucking bananas, if guests come in and your dog goes bananas, if you feed your dog and they go bananas, like that stuff follows you outside. And guess what? When your dog is bananas, they won't listen. They won't listen. Right? So all the stuff we're telling you to do is about controlling arousal. Love the show? Well, I have great news. We are offering an inexpensive subscription to our new premium content. This is content that isn't available to the general public,
We make it just for our subscribers. We're going to cover a variety of new topics in these episodes, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun. So you can jump right down into the show notes to get that website address, and then skip over there and sign up for this premium content. Just wanted to take a second to let you guys know about that. Thank you so much for your support. And now, on with the show.
Number two. This is a big one. People are afraid to turn up the heat. And there's some overlap between number two and number one. People are afraid to turn up the heat to provide the accountability. And we just have found that a lot of dogs, not to mention any specific breeds, golden doodles. I'm kidding, of course. Like, this could be any dog, but we see it a lot with the golden doodles. There's clowns, and everything's kind of a game to them. That's really common, but it happens across the board, trust me. So, but people are afraid. They're afraid to turn up the level on their e-collar. They're afraid to really enforce rules for a variety of reasons. It's just nerve-wracking, right? Nobody wants to hurt their dog. We don't want to hurt your dog either, right? But the fact is that sometimes it's going to need to be really uncomfortable. But chances are, once you've had a couple of those conversations with your dog, they're going to reduce drastically, right? It's just people try to get the reliability and the behavior from their dog without ever having the conversation. And with a lot of dogs, that's just not going to work. They're going to run roughshod right over you. And we've seen that. We saw it recently. We had a dog go home, was a pretty sensitive dog, definitely wanted to do his own thing, but was pretty easy to dial in once we had the conversation with him and once we provided the accountability, right? But he went home and they're having kind of a hard time in certain situations because he probably isn't taking them seriously. That's what we usually see. They have a history with the owners, right? Of, this isn't what we do here. This isn't what we do in this house. This isn't what I do with you. I do my own thing. And so they just slip right back into that and they try to just do their own thing. And it's like, if nobody is willing to draw a line in the sand.
Hey, down.
Sterling's on place. I just caught her kind of standing up, watching the pug. She was, I think, thinking about coming off there. So, yeah, of course, dogs will say, oh, no, I don't do any of this stuff for you, right? Doesn't mean they don't know it. And Joyce always says it really well in the Go Home lesson. She says this to nearly everybody. She says, you just want to remember when you go home, your dog knows all of these things. They're well-practiced. They know how to do it. They know how to respond to the e-collar. Like, we've already trained them. So if you go home and, like, your dog's not doing any of the stuff, they're not giving you these behaviors, it's something you're doing wrong, right? And that's not to pick on them. It's just you got to look at what you're doing and try some different stuff. And so that's scary, but because you got to experiment. You can't just stay in your comfort zone. And so often my first piece of advice to people, and I'll usually ask some questions first, like, what exactly are they doing and how are you responding to that? And then what do you get when you respond that way? But usually, and I mean like 90% of the time, people are just going a little too easy on their dog, right? So you have all those things we already talked about like not using the structure, not using the safety net at first, right? But then there's the accountability piece and people are just afraid to turn up the heat and send the memo home. And like, sometimes you have to do that. And like I said, once you do, it's not usually something you have to do a bunch, right? Your dog just needs to know that you actually mean it. They need to take you seriously now. Because you got to remember, that's not how they see you. Usually when your dog goes home, they just, you know, already have a history, attached to you. They already have a relationship built that now they need to see has changed. And so, you know, usually we're also letting small moments go. Like, owners often, I think, don't see the same things we see. And so some of those moments tend to get missed, which might not be a big deal, right? But it could be. So what I mean by that is the dog starts getting excited and it's not being addressed. This might be as small as like how your dog behaves at the front door on your way out. It might be how your dog's behaving in the car or when they get out of the car. It might be when you first walk into this environment that you're going to, right? If you let your dog go through that sequence of getting more aroused, getting more stimulated, and you're not addressing it, that arousal is just going click, 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 right? Like a roller coaster. And then it's just like off the cliff. And then it's too hard. Things are going to go sideways. So your best bet is to really try to follow the instructions to a T and address those small moments of arousal, right? But those are the moments everyone says, well, I don't mind that. And it's like, I get it. But that plays a role in how your dog is going to respond to you, right? You literally are teaching your dog how to control their arousal. If you don't do that, everything stays harder. And for the record, I'm not saying you can't do it that way, right? But here's the thing. If you're going to let your dog get excited at the door, get excited in the car, get excited when they get out of the car, fine. Then when you call your dog and they're beelining toward another dog, a squirrel, whatever it is, you're going to have to turn this sucker way up and make your dog scream like a banshee. And that's your fault. And I'm not saying it's always your fault. Like sometimes that's just the way it is. But you've let that arousal get completely out of control. You've given them the autonomy. You've let things go off a cliff. And now you're trying to reel it back in. It's like you're waiting until the most challenging moment to have any conversation at all. And so you're going to have to yell. And I don't mean with your voice. I mean with your e-collar. Whereas if you're having those conversations throughout the day and you're telling your dog, nope, I want you to do this. Nope, I want you to do that. It's not appropriate to get that excited right now. We don't stare at other dogs that way. If you're having those conversations and you have expectations and standards throughout the day, your dog is less aroused, right? You make them hold it down in the car. When they get out of the car, they have to stay right with you and settle. That's a different dog than a dog that is ahead of you going out the front door, is pacing in the car, is getting out of the car and they're scanning the environment for other dogs. That's a different dog. That's a dog that is going to lose it, right? And you're going to have to come in much, much hotter and higher with your consequences. So it's like, if you want to be able to be gentler with your e-collar, then have more conversations with it. That's how you do that, right? But people are afraid to turn up the heat, or they're afraid to just use it for the small moments throughout the day, which is how we build the communication and we build the relationship. So you don't want to avoid it. That's not how you build the communication. Of course not. But like I said, number two and number one, we're going to be have some overlap. And so lastly, number one, which overlaps with being afraid to turn up the heat, is people tell themselves a story. So people tell themselves a story about how their dog is confused, right? So then that gives them an excuse not to do it, right? Oh, I don't need to hold my dog accountable anymore because I say he's confused. They make up a story about how their dog is afraid, right? So anytime their dog doesn't want to do something, is acting like a monkey, is avoiding or playing keep away, any of these things, right? It's automatically the dog is fearful or afraid. So we have some dogs, you know, they'll kind of do this thing where they're trying to get away from you and you go to put their collars on. And people say, oh, he's so fearful of his collar. And it's like, no, no, he's not. So you really can't have a dog that's afraid of a collar because the collar itself doesn't do anything. The handler does. What your collars do is entirely up to you. But we do see dogs that are just monkeys about putting anything on them, right? We've had dogs do that with harnesses too. Like, not that we use them, but we have people come in here that are like, I can't get her flat collar on. I can't get a leash on. I can't get a harness on. Right? But no one's saying they're fearful of those things because it's a story we make up in our head. And again, it gives you an excuse to not have to do it, right? Oh, my dog's afraid. I don't have to do it. We make up a story about, you know, how we're damaging our relationship, or we're stripping our dog of their personality. And again, it gives you a free pass, right? Oh, don't have to do it. Gives your dog a free pass. He doesn't have to do it. So be very, very careful about the story that you invent to go with what you're seeing. Humans tend to way overthink things. And I'm not saying that dogs are never afraid or that they never panic. But most of the time when that happens, it's either a dog that is genetically just wired to be nervous, or maybe they've just never experienced accountability and it makes them uncomfortable. And in that case, we just have to work them through that. They have to get used to things are now non-negotiable, right? And that's not a bad thing. That's a thing that could save their life. That's a thing that's going to give them more freedom. That's not a bad thing. So even if your dog is nervous, even if your dog is uncomfortable, you're doing them a disservice by just caving to that and saying, well, that's all right, you don't have to do it. It's like, no, you're not going to get any of the value out of any of this, and neither are they. Right? So, and I'm not picking on people here, but it's like, take a look in the mirror, because like maybe you're partially responsible for creating a dog that has such a weak, soft, sensitive state of mind. Right? And maybe you're not. Maybe it's entirely genetic. But if your dog crumbles simply because things are non-negotiable, that's not healthy. And that needs to be overcome. So you can't let that get in your way. But most of the time, what we see is dogs are actually totally fine. I mean, I've done lessons with people. One comes to mind every time I talk about this. I had an older couple with a human aggressive German Shepherd. And during our training lesson, we got to talking about something, and the dog laid down and went to sleep and was just lying on the floor, very comfortable, soundly sleeping. And the woman actually looked at me and told me that her dog was terrified in that moment. I had a couple with a couple of giant Bernese Mountain Dogs, wonderful dogs. And the female dog was just really a clown, did her own thing, kind of thought it was funny, I think, to get a rise out of people and like play keep away, and just was like, nah, I'm not doing this right now, I would just go the other way. That's what I saw. But the woman in that scenario, and it was the woman both times, but trust me, that's a coincidence. We get just as many men in here who make up these same stories. She believed her dog was terrified of the e-collar training. And, you know, if somebody believes that, there's nothing I'm going to say to convince them otherwise. Right? I will tell them what I know. That's what they're paying me for. I will tell them what I see. But at the end of the day, if they continue to tell themselves this thing, then it's just true in their mind. And it's going to get in their way, and it's going to hamper their results. And chances are they're just not even going to do the things that need to be done, which is a shame. Right? But this dog just happily sauntered off. Just didn't want to do any of the stuff we were doing. Tail was up and wagging. Right? So a dog that's terrified is going to be cowering with its tail down. And that wasn't even happening at all. Right, but sometimes dogs panic just because they do have a holy shit moment, right? And that's not the same as like your dog being a fearful dog. It's like there's just a moment in time where they know they're usually clowns, and they know that being a clown will get them in trouble. And so they might have a moment of, oh God, what do I do? What do I do? Right? And so what? So what? So you stay calm and quiet, and you work them through it with whatever they need, right? If they need accountability, you provide accountability. If they just need calm, quiet guidance, give them calm, quiet guidance. right? But you get them from point A to point B and you show them what you want and you move on. And guess what? It'll get a little easier every time. But if you choose to make a big deal out of small moments where your dog seems like they might be confused or they might be nervous, then you just get nowhere, right? You just stay stuck. So stop telling yourself stories about what your dog is feeling and about why they're feeling it and about all the problems that's going to cause, because it's just not. And sometimes dogs are just born that way, right? We have Jenny here right now. She is really uncomfortable with the training we're doing, right? And it's not that anything bad is happening. We haven't even done anything challenging yet. So we're just doing really basic, simple reps, right? And she'll just stress pant, shake the whole nine, because some dogs just do, right? And nothing bad is happening. So for us to accommodate that and say, oh, well, you just don't have to do it, then we would be doing her a huge disservice. She deserves the training. That's how I see it. But be careful about what you're telling yourself, right? Even if your dog is nervous or scared in a certain situation, even if your dog is stressed, that doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It doesn't mean that it's bad. It doesn't mean anything necessarily, right? And it's like, if you have questions, reach out, right? If you used me, reach out to me. If you used someone else, reach out to them and ask your questions. But just be really careful about the stories that you're coming up with in your head about your dog's state of mind, what they're feeling and why they're feeling it, because it's really dangerous. And they're not humans. They don't speak English. They'll never be able to tell you what's going on. But at the end of the day, it's like I always say, your dog learns through patterns, and it's your job to just provide a consistent pattern. At the end of the day, that usually resolves any confusion and any anxiety.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. I really hope you enjoyed the show. If there's a specific topic you'd like to hear discussed, you can send that to me directly via email or fan mail. Just jump down into the show notes. That information will be there for you. I really look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for supporting the show, and I look forward to next time.